The Haunted UK podcast is produced and released in stereo. Listening through an environment such as headphones or stereo speakers will ensure you get the best experience.
Hello, lover of things that go bump in the night. This is Dan Cummins.
And I'm Lindsay Cummins.
And we co-host the paranormal horror podcast, Scared to Death. Are shadow people real? What about demonic possessions? Poltergeist activity. Do you believe in ghosts? Malevolent entities? Are aliens real? Could you be abducted?
We don't know, but what we do know is that we have over 230 episodes of stories on our podcast, Scared to Death, exploring all of the possibilities.
Each week, we share several supposedly true stories that have been gathered from around the world and submissions from our own fans of allegedly true tales.
Curious about the paranormal? Just like a spooky story? Do you need more fear to fuel you through your long work days?
Come join us. New episodes of Scared to Death are released every Tuesday night. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. We hope you end up scared to death.
Here at Haunted UK Podcast Towers, we're committed to giving you high-quality, great episodes time after time after time. But this takes a lot of effort in research, writing, editing, recording, mixing, mastering, and publishing. We don't have a fancy production company or a bank of scriptwriters or a large budget to keep everything going. We are a fully independent podcast. If you'd like to help the show, then why not get over to Ko-fi and search for the Haunted UK podcast, where you can subscribe to give just £3 per month, the price of a coffee, or as much as you like. If you'd rather not sign up for a monthly subscription, then you can simply make a one-off donation. Again, as little or as much as you like. This really helps the show with our website, Ko-fi membership, merchandise, equipment, as well as other financial commitments. So if you feel that you'd like to help keep the lights burning, the wheels turning, and the stories rolling, then why not consider getting over to Ko-fi and donating to the show? That's Ko-fi and search for the Haunted UK podcast. Thank you. And here are the names of the amazing people who have donated to the show recently. They are Nathan Hatton, Tammy Scanlon, and last but not least, Victoria Clinch. We also now have some exciting new merchandise available on our website, including mugs, mouse mats, drinks bottles, bags, t-shirts, hoodies, and even bottle openers. Get yourself over to www.hauntedukpodcast.com to check out our Etsy shop. Now, without any further delay, let's get this episode started. Doors began opening and closing by themselves. Loud banging noises were coming from downstairs, as well as the sounds of footsteps from someone who was clearly walking around the rooms below her bedroom. But it was what happened next that truly frightened her. As clear as any voice she'd ever heard, someone said the name.
Azizel.
The name from her nightmares. Then, as she continued to talk to the Ouija board, the planchette began to move, rapidly spelling out the same name. Julie completely freaked out and threw the planchette across the room, but made the mistake of not closing the session down, not saying goodbye. So whatever was now in the house was staying in the house. This is episode 50, part 2 of the Haunted UK podcast. And we're returning for another chilling batch of your stories. Welcome, dear listeners, once again to another episode packed full of your stories. And just as in part one, there's a little something here for everyone. These episodes are always a pleasure to put together and read, and it's so humbling to know that they also help others to either come to terms with an experience or to give them the courage to share it. Our next listener story comes from Heidi, who's been a long-term listener and follower of the show on social media. After listening to episode 39, Woodchester Mansion, Heidi got in touch with the show to share a number of strange experiences which she witnessed during a paranormal tour of the building. Hi, Steve. We first ventured to Woodchester Mansion on an overnight visit around 10 years ago. This was organized through a lady we knew, and I'd wanted to go for a while, but my husband was very hesitant. You see, I'm very intrigued by the weird, wonderful, and macabre in this world, but my hubby, not so much. But he eventually caved in, and we booked it. We live a little drive away from Woodchester, but it didn't take us long to get there, and before we knew it, we were driving down the long lane which takes you directly to the mansion. As you can imagine, when this took place, it was in the autumn at 9 p.m. at night, with fog everywhere, so it was a little eerie to say the least. We parked up and my hubby mentioned he thought we'd made the wrong decision. I suppose it could have been the nerves, as we knew what we were about to do, but something didn't feel right. Unnatural, shall we say. Anyway, we carried on into the mansion and we were greeted by a few of the volunteers who worked there. Everything was very pleasant to start with. We met a few other people and we started to have a walk around, but almost immediately, I could see blue orb-like lights. I kept mentioning this to my husband and was overheard by another lady who said that she could also see them too, and at one point, they became so bright that I had to look away. At least, I knew I wasn't going mad. When we ventured upstairs, I kept seeing shadows moving, but I put this down to the low light and the few other people in this area with us. We also kept hitting both cold and hot spots throughout this area. Then whilst one volunteer was doing a talk, I felt like I'd completely zoned out and saw what I took to be a monk walking in front of her in a long brown hooded cloak. The monk stopped and stood still for a while, and I nudged my husband to tell him what I was looking at, but he couldn't see anything. The monk then walked off, and I followed, curious to know where it was going and if I could see it, genuinely thinking it was someone playing a prank. But when I got to where I'd last seen it, there was only a wall into a dead end. I just shook it off, thinking my eyes were playing tricks on me, but deep down, I knew what I'd seen. We then went down to the cellars, and the smell in there was bad enough, but as soon as I started walking down the stairs, I started feeling nauseous, with a growing pressure around my head and neck. I continued on, and whilst one of the volunteers was talking to our group, I stood up against one of the cellar walls, as she said she was going to turn her torch off to show us how pitch black it was down there without any light. It certainly was pitch black, and we all heard quite a few noises down there that we couldn't explain, especially what sounded like someone shunting around. But there were only six of us in there. It sounded like someone dragging something, and we were all certain that it wasn't any of us, that's for sure. Whilst leaning against the wall, I felt like I was being poked repeatedly in the back, but I didn't want to say anything. I thought I'd look a fool as I was stood against a wall. But as with the blue orb lights, another lady said that she'd felt something tugging at her leg, so it encouraged me to mention what I'd felt. At this point, the volunteer quickly suggested that maybe it was time for us to leave the cellar. Curiously, she didn't say why, but she must have known something was amiss. On the way out of the cellar, the nausea was awful, and as I was leaving the lower end of the cellar to reach the stairs leading back up, I saw something move out of the corner of my eye. I couldn't explain what it was, but it was about knee height and made a shuffling, grunting sound. It looked like something was facing the corner, and I could only see the back of it. At one point, the grunting was so unbearably loud in my ear that I just knew I needed to get out of there rapidly and quickly. I can't tell you exactly what it was, but I know I saw something strange that I can't explain. When it happened, I had such a horrible feeling of sadness and fear wash over me that I practically ran to get out of there. And I certainly wasn't returning anytime soon. The last thing we took part in was with a medium that joined us on the overnight visit. She sat in front of all of us and lit some candles and placed them down behind her. This was something to do with her getting into a meditative state, but I can't remember the exact name of what it was. She said if we were lucky enough, we'd make contact with a spirit or two. Now, I'd known this lady for a while and believed her to be genuine. She told me way before this night that I was 6 weeks pregnant without anyone else knowing, apart from my husband. So that shook me a little, needless to say. Whilst she was sat there looking around, casually turning her head to look at each of us, I started to notice her face changing into what looked like very definite male features. Her brow line changed as if she was frowning madly, and she looked very angry. It then dawned on me that her face had completely changed. Now, at this point, my husband had noticed too, and we kept looking away and back again to see if it was some sort of trick brought on by the candlelight, but it was still the same. A mad expression, almost looking like she, or he, wanted to hurt us. My husband and I both became rather uncomfortable, and so did a few others, and they too mentioned her face changing, but strangely, some of the others in the party said they hadn't noticed anything. Not much really scares me, but this really did bother me, to the extent that it felt like someone or something wanted to hurt us, and I just wanted to get away. I kept my head down until this finished, and those of us who'd seen her face change explained this to her. The medium commented that she'd wanted this to happen to see if anyone or anything would come through. Well, they definitely did. I can still see that face now, and it gives me the creeps. After this, my husband and I just kept getting a bad feeling, a feeling that was telling us that we needed to leave. So we did just that, and we certainly didn't look back. Despite all of these incidents, we have since returned to Woodchester Mansion as our children love it there, but we only go when it's daylight now. I hope I haven't gone on for too long with this story, and if you're interested, I have so many more stories I could tell you. Tales about the area we live in, which is very nearby Gloucester Cathedral and Gloucester Prison, which is my next overnight visit. Wish me luck. I've been told that we have ley lines going through our house, and that would explain a lot of the activity we've had in our home for almost the entire 20 years that we've lived here. But that's a whole other email. Thanks for reaching out and for reading my story. I hope you found it interesting. Kind regards, Heidi. Well, Heidi, I can tell you for certain that I cannot wait for you to send us more stories, and I'm absolutely sure that the listeners would also love to hear more from you. Please, get in touch. Our next story comes from Geraldine in Northern Ireland. Living in a small, beautiful, isolated village sounds like absolute heaven to some. But you should be very careful what you wish for. Because, as in the case of the idyllic village of Ballandery, you never quite know what or who you're going to bump into. Love the podcast and thought I'd share my story. My name is Geraldine. I'm 65 and live in Ballandery in Northern Ireland. 5 years ago, I witnessed something that still puzzles me to this day. At the time, I wasn't frightened in the slightest, and have since felt a strange kind of privilege to have had the experience. Ballandery is a rural area 11 miles from Lisburn. It's surrounded by fields and farmland and consists of a school and a dozen small housing developments. It doesn't even have a shop. At the centre is a crossroads with four roads reaching out. One to Lisburn, two leading to other villages nearby, and the last, a minor laneway, leading to Loch Ney. Situated on the crossroads are some 17th century buildings, including the old schoolhouse, the Moravian church and burial ground, and some renovated buildings which had originally been the general store many, many years earlier. On the last corner is a new housing development, so as you can see, Ballandery is basically in the middle of nowhere. 5 years ago, my normal daily routine was an early 5:30 a.m. start, which began with walking Ralph, my wee miniature schnauzer. We left the house and crossed to the far side of the road and started to walk towards the crossroads. It was November, but not cold or damp, just very, very quiet. So we wouldn't have expected to encounter anyone at this early hour. When we were around 15 meters from the crossroads, a strange mist formed on the corner of the church, but the surrounding areas were completely clear of it. From this mist stepped a person which I felt was male. Ralph reacted by growling and barking, but the person was getting closer and closer to us, moving from the opposite side of the road. This person didn't respond to Ralph's angry barks and didn't acknowledge us in any way at all. By now he was just 3 or 4 meters from us, and I could take in details of his clothing. Green or brown bell-shaped coat coming to his knees, with a large hood which sat on his shoulders and came quite far out from his face. He was wearing gaiters on his legs, like the ones soldiers in the First World War would have worn. His arms were swinging, and he seemed to be walking very purposely, as if he had somewhere to be. Ralph was still barking, and by this time he was almost facing us, which gave me the ideal opportunity to stop and see if he'd acknowledge us, as we were so close. I looked to make eye contact, but instead, what I saw inside the hood was nothing short of surreal. There was no face, just an immense, bright, white glowing light from the hood. I was completely frozen to the spot, astonished at what I was seeing. Ralph was still barking away as we both watched as this strange figure continued to walk up the road until he was eventually out of view, swallowed up by the darkness of the countryside. I've shared my encounter with locals, people who've lived in the area longer than I have, and they were not surprised by my encounter with the walking man, as he's been seen many times before. So it leaves me wondering, who is he? What is he? A First World War soldier wanting to return home one last time? Or could that be amazing white light be projected from the future? A time traveler come to visit Ballandery? Maybe not. After all, it is in the middle of nowhere. Feeling fortunate, Geraldine. Making our way back to England and to the north, we join Barry, who kindly wrote into the show to share a couple of very creepy stories which were told to him by his parents. Hi, my name is Barry from North Shields. I love listening to your podcast, and I have a few creepy stories to share with your listeners. Although I've never experienced anything paranormal myself, both my parents have, and it's their stories I want to share. My dad told me a story about his experience with a strange entity when he was a child. He lived on a large council estate, and one evening, him and one of his friends were sitting on a wall next to an underpass, which was next to an electricity substation. As they sat there, they both became aware of a white mist, which was descending from above the underpass. As it continued to fall, it took on a human-like appearance and then floated at pace towards them. At this point, they both fell off the wall and in a blind panic, bolted out of there as fast as they could move. The area has since been redeveloped, and as far as my dad is aware, the underpass is no longer there, but even after 60 years, he can still recall it vividly. My mum also told me of a few paranormal experiences which she had a few years back. She was working at a local sports club as a barmaid in the village where I grew up. She was working one evening during the week, and the place was empty. This wasn't uncommon, especially on a weekday. She was behind the bar cleaning and keeping herself busy when she heard the internal doors close in the corridor. This corridor runs from the entrance of the club to the sports field at the back and has doors to changing rooms and toilets. At the time, the only doors which were unlocked were the toilets, so nobody had access to any other parts of the club. There is a second set of doors along from the entrance, which have glass panels, and these lead to the cricket pitch. As she looked towards these doors, she saw the figure of a man dressed in a full cricket kit walking towards her. She found this very unusual, as it was late in the evening and wasn't expecting any of the cricketers to be fully dressed up, but just assumed they were going into the practice area and would soon come into the bar when they noticed that the doors were locked. So, she waited and waited and waited, but nobody turned up. She decided to go and check for herself, to see where this man had gone. So, made her way towards the corridor, but found nobody there. She checked the toilets, but again, nobody there.
Hello? Anybody there?
By now, she had become spooked, as there was no way anyone could have left the club without her noticing, and all the other doors in the corridor were locked. She relayed what she had experienced to a few of the regulars and was surprised to find out that others had experienced something very similar. Thanks for listening to these experiences and keep up the good work. Barry. Our next collection of stories was sent in by Kelly, who has contributed to the show before by sending in some truly amazing tales from when she worked as a guide at a stately home. You can catch up with this story in one of our Season 4 listeners' episodes, The Staircase. Notably, they involved her son, who, when he was 3 years old, became friends with a little boy who lived in this stately home. But strangely, no one else could see him. And it's Kelly's second story, which brings an eerie conclusion to these experiences her young son had. Kelly's first story is a fantastic tale of a possible time slip event. But what is really astonishing is that Kelly's second story also features a time slip. We very rarely get stories like these, so it's an absolute pleasure to share not one, but two with you. And both stories, I think, will send a shiver or two. Kelly writes, "Hi, Steve. Really enjoying the short haunts, and during the last episode, I scared myself silly whilst running on the treadmill. I was re-listening to the series from the beginning while working and was listening to the Time Slips episode. It reminded me of something that you might be interested in, which happened to my dad. It's only short, but fascinating. My dad is a very northern bloke who has no interest in the paranormal, but what he experienced, what happened to him one night, he still cannot explain, even many years later. He and my stepmom had been to a wedding somewhere in the Cotswolds and were taking a few days to drive home, staying at a few old pubs along the way. On the night in question, they were trying to find where they had booked in to stay, but the weather had become bad with storms and heavy rain. They realized they were completely lost and were getting quite anxious when they came across a little village with a pub. They decided it was safer to stop and to see if they could stay there. They parked up and went inside. My dad said straight away that it felt strange. It seemed very old-fashioned, full of locals who all watched them come in. They asked if they could have a room and were given the keys to one. My stepmom went upstairs while my dad got the luggage from the car. He said that when he got back into the bar, he felt really odd, as if the place seemed wrong, as if it was much older, and the people all seemed to be wearing old-fashioned clothes. When I asked him, he said it was hard to describe. It was like they were wearing 1940s or 1950s clothes. My dad and stepmom came down. They ordered some food and drinks, which my dad said they enjoyed, but somehow they both felt really uncomfortable. They finally went to bed, but my dad didn't sleep all that night, saying that he felt like he was in the song Hotel California by the Eagles. You can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. He was convinced they were in a time slip and that they wouldn't be able to get out. Note: my dad isn't a superstitious man at all. He said they got up stupidly early, got dressed and packed, and left cash on the bar for the bill, then left immediately. When they'd traveled a few miles further away, they stopped for lunch and asked about the village they'd been to and the pub they'd stayed in. And this is where things got really weird. The barmaid was a local and said she knew the village well. It was small, and she was surprised to hear they'd stayed there, because there was no longer a pub which offered rooms. My mum and dad then decided to drive back to see for themselves, but they couldn't find the village, no matter how many times they tried. This must be well over 30 years ago now, and I was a child. My dad still talks about it now and still can't work out what happened. He is convinced that they could have woken up and been stuck there forever. He mentions it every time he hears Hotel California. Thought you might like this. The time slip story with the village in your time slips episode reminded me of it. So this is where Kelly's first story ends and her second one begins. It takes place at the house where she used to work. It happened to the wife of the caretaker there, and it's a strange, unsettling story because, as mentioned, it weirdly arcs back to the experiences her son had at the house too. Kelly continues. I wanted to get in touch with you again to tell you another story associated with the stately home I worked at. It was my son who asked if I'd mentioned this, but I hadn't, so here it is. My son dated a girl called Jade while he was at school. At the time, we didn't realize that her granddad was the caretaker of this stately home, while I was working there as the senior guide. My son started telling him about all the things that had happened to us in the house, so he began to tell him one of his own stories. As the caretaker, it was his job to look after the fabric of the house and make sure that in the winter the heating, which was Victorian, was fully working and that the fires had been lit in the kitchen and in other big fireplaces. One winter, he had pneumonia and was just too unwell to get out of bed, so his wife said she would go into work and save him the job. She went off and came back about an hour later, and he asked if everything had gone okay. She told him that she had lit the fires in the kitchen and the withdrawing room, but she had left the fireplace in the nursery as she'd run out of coal, and it was a long way to carry it back up. He looked at her in surprise and said, "We don't have a nursery." She was shocked and was adamant that there was. She described the room in detail, saying that it had beds down each side, a rocking horse and dolls on the floor, and it was in the tower wing. She'd been surprised by how many toys were out. He was adamant that there was no nursery and got up out of bed, asking that she take him to the room she had described. When they got there, there was no nursery, but instead a lady's boudoir, just as it should have been. His wife was totally stunned and still insisted it was a nursery she'd seen. When the manager of the house came in, he began telling her about that room, and she went very quiet. Apparently, it had been a nursery once, but not for many, many years, as the Victorian owners of the house never had children. The rocking horse was still stored in the attic of the house, which was obviously out of bounds for the public. I think he was keen to tell my son this story because it was right by the staircase where he used to talk to the little boy when he was young, which I mentioned in a previous Listener's Stories episode. Love the podcast. One of my favorites. Best regards, Kelly. This is such a fascinating conclusion to Kelly's son's experiences detailed in the Staircase episode. In this episode, it's revealed that the little boy is called Thomas, and every time he would play with Kelly's son, he would ask, rather sadly, "Where have my toys gone?" Because, well, they weren't there anymore, and the nursery wasn't either. It was a different room. And so, I can imagine it must have been a sobering moment when the caretaker relayed this tale to Kelly's son all those years later. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. It's John Bradley who we hear from next. Interestingly, one of John's other stories has been developed for an upcoming Short Haunt, which we can't wait to share with you. It's a fantastic but terrifying tale of a strange shadow entity which stalked him and his friend through the grounds of a cemetery. These next two stories, however, are completely different, but still as fascinating. The following experience happened in the early 90s, and I was still living at home with my parents. My friends and I had been out for the evening at our local pub, which was always a favorite spot of ours. It was late in the evening when I returned, and not wanting to wake my parents, I tried to be as quiet as possible and slid my keys slowly into the Yale lock and very gently opened the door. It was then I instantly noticed it. As I opened the front door and entered the hallway, I could hear the kitchen tap on the sink was on. But not just a little, it was going full blast into the sink. I rushed forward into the kitchen and completely turned it off while trying to comprehend what had just occurred. I then heard the sound of the TV, which is easily identifiable in my parents' house as it's open plan, so the living room, dining area and kitchen are all one. Now, as I walked into the living room, still wondering what was going on with the sink and tap, I looked at the TV. What struck me as being very strange was that I could hear sound, but the picture was mainly static, coming and going, with the sound of the channel not completely audible. I tried to listen intently, but couldn't make out what channel it was or what was showing. I leant forward to hit the off switch, but was stunned to see that it was already in the off position, with the red light showing it was completely off. This stopped me in my tracks, and then just as quickly as this noise and static started, it stopped. Now, I didn't think too much of this at the time, but in the morning, I asked my parents if they'd heard the tap and the TV last night, and both of them who were very light sleepers, said no, not at all. I told them what I had come home to discover the previous night, but nothing was ever said of it again, and I'm honestly not sure why. My parents still live in the house today, and it's the only time I've ever experienced anything like that before in the property. Lastly, I've been looking into the subject of lucid dreaming, and I'll explain my reasons behind this. I've never been a person who remembers my dreams, but on the few occasions that I have, the memories of my dreams have been very vivid. Now, my auntie passed away in early 2018 after a long illness, and she was in her late 80s at the time of her passing. We're a close family and would spend our Christmases at each other's homes every year. This happens throughout my childhood, right up to now, still arranging this event each year. But like I said, I very rarely remember my dreams. But one of the times I did, it remained stuck in my mind. It was probably a year after my auntie had passed, and to me the dream seemed short, but very vivid. I saw a woman in her very early 20s, dressed in a white floral pattern pleated skirt with a light color top, like a knitted cardigan. Her hair was very dark in color, almost black, and shoulder length. She was standing right in front of me, but didn't speak or say anything, but looked directly at me and smiled. Instantly, I knew that it was my auntie as a young woman. The thing that I find strange and what stands out is the fact I never knew my auntie as a young woman. The earliest memories I have of her are when she was in her late 50s and onwards. For me, I like to think it was her way of saying she was okay and the pain was over, and that she was now in a better place. Thanks for reading my stories, and keep up the good work. I hope these are helpful, and you and the listeners enjoy them. Many thanks, John. We now come to our final set of stories and the reason behind the name of this episode. Katie is a witch. A real witch who lives in Dublin, Ireland. Now that may conjure up, excuse the pun, many ideas of what a witch actually is. For some, the image of a broomstick and a black cat appears. For others, a very spiritual person whose rituals are meant to heal, to do good, to bring happiness. Whatever your opinions of witches are, I personally feel incredibly lucky that Katie got in touch with the show and was kind enough to share some of her many experiences. And I have to say here and now, this won't be the last time you hear from Katie, because there's more to come in the future, with more strange tales she has for us. So, we begin her tales and experiences regarding Ouija boards. This was initially the reason that Katie got in touch with the show, and was so glad she did. So, it's time to hand over to Katie and let her take it from here. As a witch, I very rarely dabble with Ouija boards at all. When I say rarely, I mean I don't. I know this may seem odd, as standard people may think that we witches dabble with all things divinatory, but I feel they can be extremely dangerous to those who don't know how to properly use them. I have first-hand experience as a witness as to what can go terribly wrong when one is used without taking the correct precautions. And this brings me to my first story. It concerned a friend of mine who we'll call Julie, and took place way back in high school. We would have been around 16 years old or so at the time, and she had begun to experiment with a Ouija board on her own. Now, before we carry on, you must understand that boundaries need to be set before you begin messing around with these things. By boundaries, I mean a salt protection circle, things like that. But she wasn't using any of these things to help protect her from whatever could come through. It's also important to know how to correctly close the door when you finish using an Ouija board, because if you don't, there's a danger that whatever you were in contact with could stay in our world. Now, not long after she began using this board, she started having very vivid, nightmarish dreams. And all of these dreams would contain a name. A very specific name. An unusual name. Now, because this happened so long ago, I forget exactly what that name was. But suffice to say, she continued to quote this name to us after these dreams. She would also tell us about the many people who she'd been in contact with whilst using the board. One particular person she said she'd contacted was a pilgrim who'd been killed during the expedition of the Mayflower in 1620 as it sailed to the New World. I genuinely believed what she was saying, that she was talking to some spirit, but continued to warn her that she was playing with something that she had no idea how to control. So, going back to the name that Julie kept hearing in her nightmares. For the sake of this story, let's say that it was Azazel, who was a demon, a fallen angel, according to Christian and Judaism texts. She would continue to tell me that this name was repeated over and over in her nightmares. One night, while she was at home alone, she began another session on her Ouija board in her bedroom, but this time, strange things began to happen. Doors began opening and closing by themselves. Loud banging noises were coming from downstairs, as well as the sounds of footsteps from someone who was clearly walking around the rooms below her bedroom. But it was what happened next that truly frightened her. As clear as any voice she'd ever heard, someone said the name.
Azazel.
The name from her nightmares. Then, as she continued to talk to the Ouija board, the planchette began to move, rapidly spelling out the same name. Julie completely freaked out and threw the planchette across the room, but made the mistake of not closing the session down, not saying goodbye. So whatever was now in the house was staying in the house. Julie then made a call to another friend and asked if she was okay to spend the night, and then left the house for the evening. She told us that there was a strange and eerie vibe in there, and she couldn't stand it any longer. She even seemed surprised when we all said to her, "What did you expect? You never closed the circle, never said goodbye." Strange things continued to happen in her house, and she was constantly looking behind her, as if something was always following closely behind. She also had a lot of tragedy strike her family shortly after this, and this continued until I finally lost contact with her a few years later. High school finished and I moved on to college, and it was here that I met two friends who were also witches. We'll call them Jane and Bob. During one conversation, Bob mentioned Ouija boards and asked if me and Jane had ever used one. Jane said that she'd used one a few times, but didn't really seem too impressed with the results she got from it. I said that I'd never used one, but knew a friend who had, and she had a lot of strange things happen to her. In the end, Bob persuaded us both to join him for a Ouija board session, but before we started, we made sure to set up a salt circle, to lay our boundaries down, to enforce the fact that we were only interested in allowing those spirits who were good to come through and make contact with us. Now, personally, I think that's just bullshit, because anything can come through and say that it meant no harm, just so it can make it into our world. So almost immediately, the planchette started moving around the board and spelling out various things. It was Jane and me who had our fingers on the planchette, as we were the most sensitive, and Bob was writing down everything that was being spelt out. One of the spirits that came through was that of a young female witch from the 1700s who'd been killed. We couldn't seem to get rid of her, as she kept coming back through over and over, desperately wanting to talk to us. As we spoke to her, we noticed that a strange dark mist seemed to envelope the whole house, as if the night had seeped into every room, darkening the whole place down. The atmosphere then completely shifted to something which wasn't pleasant at all, but it was something that the witch said that totally disturbed Bob, and unfortunately, due to time gone by, I cannot remember what this was. But it had to do with the spirit giving blatantly incorrect information. It had lied to us. He immediately wanted to stop the session and shut the board down. We couldn't understand what was going on, but Bob insisted that we stop the session. We were freaked out enough, so we did, but the girl tried to resist us closing the board down and became incredibly angry, saying that she wanted us to stay, wanted to continue talking, but we refused, and eventually said goodbye, bringing an end to the session. After this, we decided to get out and get some air, as we were all flustered, but we all noticed something very strange indeed as we walked. A shadow-type figure was following us everywhere we went. Now I know that sounds mad, but all of us saw this thing, and we weren't all hallucinating. We continued to walk until we'd reached a popular hangout spot, which was right next to, surprise surprise, a cemetery. It was a quiet place, and people would gather there and talk. Now, the cemetery next to this place was what I would call a dead cemetery, meaning that there were no restless spirits or ghosts there. It was just very peaceful and quiet. But it wouldn't stay like that for long. Whatever this shadow entity was, it had attached itself to us through the Ouija board, and as it sat on the cemetery wall, we could feel the evil, seething, malignant atmosphere it was emitting. We had to do something to send this dark entity back to where it had come from. So right there and then, the three of us performed a ritual. As we progressed through the ritual, we could see the entity slowly dissolve, being pulled back into whatever world it had come from. And as it melted away, the night became lighter. Not necessarily in color, but in atmosphere. It was pleasant, calm, normal. It was an experience I'll never forget. My third and final Ouija board story took place around 11 years ago, while I was working in a witch shop in Dublin. Amongst other things, I read tarot for customers in the shop, but there was also an Italian couple who worked there as well, and whilst they also did readings, they weren't tarot readings. Instead, they read Ouija. Now, I was completely surprised by this when I first met them, and because of my obvious past experiences, I didn't take them up on the offer of a free reading. But watching them perform readings on each other was absolutely fascinating. They worked in the shop for around 6 months, and as I got to know them better, the woman, Francesca, became more and more concerned by her husband Massimo's behavior. She confided in me that his entire demeanor had changed, had totally shifted from how it used to be, and he'd become more and more obsessed with using the Ouija board. Now, this particular board was beautiful. It had apparently been carved by hand by an experienced Ouija practitioner in Italy. Francesca also said that he was now using the board alone, at their house, when they always used to use it together. This was an agreement that the pair had struck up together, a rule if you like, that they would only use the board as a couple, never alone. I began to notice the change in Massimo pretty quickly. He became snarky, short-tempered, mean-spirited, and incredibly agitated. This was totally different to who he was when I'd first met him. He was a genuinely lovely man, but things continued to escalate. Francesca became so concerned by Massimo's behavior that she asked to speak to myself and the owner of the shop one day. She told us the full extent of what had been happening, and we immediately asked her if she'd aired these concerns to Massimo and asked him to stop using the board. In reply, she said that she had spoken to him and even locked the board away inside a cupboard to stop him from using it. But in an act of violence, Massimo smashed the cupboard to pieces to get to the board. Francesca then feared that at some point he would repeat this moment of anger and violence again, but that next time it would be against her. She told us that whatever these spirits or entities were that Massimo had been contacting, they had completely taken him over, and it would only be a matter of time before something truly terrible would happen. And it wasn't long before it did. One day, while the owner and I were in the shop, Francesca came in. She looked flustered, upset, in shock. Extremely concerned.
I'm fine.
Okay?
I'm fine. I just need a minute.
We asked if everything was okay. Eventually, she went on to say that Massimo had grabbed hold of her, pinned her up against a wall in their home, and threatened to kill her if she ever took the board away from him again, or even went near it. As expected, we were totally shocked, but Francesca had had enough and decided to go back to Italy. She got on a plane and went back to, I think, Naples, leaving Massimo behind. I have no idea what happened to Massimo, as I never saw him again, but it was quite clear to me, yet again, that their Ouija board was responsible for all the problems they had, and it ended up destroying their relationship. I continue to warn anyone who wants to try using one to be very careful, very vigilant, that they'll be playing with fire, and that they should forget the idea completely. So there you go. A few stories of my experiences with Ouija boards. Now, let's move on to ghosts. I had an experience just the other night, and decided it was time to send in volume one of my stories. My beloved familiar, Ollie, passed away in October 2019 of bone cancer. He was a lovely ginger cat that I'd rescued as a kitten before immigrating to Ireland. He was my heart, and we shared a very close and tangible bond. He loved being included in my rituals and almost seemed human in the many ways he interacted with those around him, especially me and my then husband Jay, who is my best friend and who I remain extremely close to. Ollie was a character in his own right and had a huge personality. On the day he passed, a lovely vet came to our house to help him cross over the Rainbow Bridge. I felt him leave us as he took his last breath. I was devastated, but had comfort in knowing he was no longer suffering. About an hour after he left us, we both heard him scraping around in his litter tray. He had a habit of overly scratching the kitty litter before exiting his kitty box, making a show of his bathroom accomplishments, so to speak. We just looked at each other, awestruck and tearful, as our precious Ollie had come to say, "Hey Mom, hey Dad, I'm okay. Don't be sad." Since then, he's haunted the house many times. I've heard him scampering around on the hardwood floors, seen him bathing himself on my bed, and caught him walking past me into the kitchen, looking for treats, no doubt. We've found whiskers and claws around the house, even though we have vacuumed and swept many times since his passing. So, back to my original story. Just the other night, this past Friday the 13th, uncanny I know, right before the Ring of Fire eclipse, I was in a very deep sleep. Because of the eclipse, I was having mad and slightly nightmarish dreams, when I physically felt a cat jump up on the bed behind me. I felt the bed springs give and make sounds and felt the weight of a cat on my back. I then felt a paw lightly touch me, which Ollie would do when he wanted cuddles. Then I felt his paws on my pillow, the weight of him, everything. He loved to snuggle at my head when I slept, so I knew it was him. I bolted wide awake as soon as I felt his paws on my pillow and said, "Ollie." But there was nothing there, only a lingering sensation that I was not alone. It was just another visit from him to say hi. I also believe he was protecting me from whatever dreams I was having by bringing me out of them. Dublin is a very haunted city, being over 1,100 years old on paper. I've had many paranormal occurrences during my years here. Here are a few of those encounters. We were house and cat sitting at Jay's old manager's house, who was a friend. It was an old Georgian house and was divided into three split levels. The ground level felt mostly normal, although it always felt like someone was watching you from the outside patio. The second floor, which had a bedroom for the cat, was very haunted. Next door to the cat's bedroom was the bathroom. I always felt like I was being watched from that room too, and actually saw a woman sitting on the bed at one point. She disappeared when I blinked. The third floor was where Jay's manager's bedroom was, as well as a few other rooms. These were also extremely haunted, but there was one room, just off from her bedroom, that always had the door closed, and she insisted it was not to be opened. I could feel something lurking in that room. I always got a picture of a crony, haggard-looking woman when I would look with my mind's eye into that room, and she was a nasty piece of work, just like a bogeyman waiting to be let out to cause havoc. When we stayed there, we always locked the bedroom door as we felt extremely uncomfortable. If one of us had to go to the toilet on the second floor, we would accompany each other because it felt so off, I guess. You could feel that whatever was in the house, it was watching you, pressing against you, goading you. When we were downstairs in the lounge, you could hear someone walking around upstairs, doors opening and closing. Footsteps on the stairs. If you had to go upstairs for anything, the shadows followed you, and unseen eyes would watch you everywhere you went. On one occasion, we couldn't find the cat, and I had to go looking for her in her bedroom. Holy Jeebus, I was beside myself. The light didn't work in the room at the time. Convenient, eh? And the darkness was cloying, suffocating. I remember something touching my shoulder and seeing shadow people out of the corner of my eyes while I was in there. I never went in there again. Now, Jay was a tour guide for a haunted walking tour company many years ago. He wrote the tour and scouted the locations and had me come along to see if they were haunted based on his assessments and historical data. I confirmed that all the locations had ghosts. One was a nondescript park down the quays that we know as Croppy's Acre. Croppy's Acre is supposedly where the British Army executed the Irish rebels of the 1798 rebellion. History books say they were all hanged at this spot and then buried in a mass unmarked grave where the park now sits. Don't ever believe your history books. While I was there scoping this place out with him, I was shown by the rebels in a mind's eye vision what actually happened, and it was brutal. Initially, when I reached out to whatever was there, I was met with rage at what had happened to them. Anger at being forgotten in an unmarked plot. I told them I was there to help, that we wanted to tell the truth of their story, and I needed them to show me what had happened. It was like a movie reel going off in my head. I saw the rebels lined up along a massive trench that stretched the length of the park and beyond. The River Liffey ran red with their blood as the British soldiers shot, stabbed, decapitated, hung, and hacked them to pieces, then dumped their bodies into this mass grave. It was horrifying. I could feel the anguish and rage from the rebels as they died, and the reveling sadism from the British troops. I relayed to Jay what I'd been shown, and he wrote it into his piece on Croppy's Acre for the tour. This site was the most active on the tour, with punters seeing shadow people, being touched repeatedly, encountering numerous cold spots, and having orbs showing up in photos, mostly red ones. But I could feel the relief and thankfulness of the rebels as their final story was being told correctly at last. This last story I will recount happened in the house I spent my early childhood in Alabama, when I was about 7 or 8 years old. I'm originally from the Bible Belt, and I was born in Alabama to an extremely evangelical religious mother who saw the paranormal, metaphysics, and occult as demonic. But my dad was indifferent to it all. My mother believed that ghosts were demons, taking on the visage of our former loved ones to trick us. I, having had my first paranormal and psychic encounters at 5 years old, believed very differently. My mother and I have always clashed in these regards, as I am not religious at all. Although, funnily enough, she always believed me when I told her of weird goings-on in the house and never preached to me about it. As I said, weird stuff always happened at the house throughout my childhood and into my teen and adult years, but the house itself was not haunted. I know what a haunted house feels like. My dad's house felt normal, and then something weird would happen that was paranormal. I believe the reason for this was that the land the house was built on was haunted. It's on a whole stretch of land that the Creek and Choctaw Native Americans lived on before the Spanish conquistadors raped and pillaged their way through the area. My best friend, Elle, and I were always finding bones in the woods at the back of the house that didn't look like they belonged to animals. Anyway, I digress. One afternoon, my sister had to go to the eye doctor to get her new glasses, but me and Elle wanted to stay home and watch cartoons. It would only take my mother 30 minutes tops to go and come back. She didn't want to leave us alone, but the animated G.I. Joe movie was on, and this was most important, so we begged and pleaded and promised that we'd stay in the den and not answer the door or phone. Reluctantly, she agreed. She left, and we engrossed ourselves in G.I. Joe. Not 5 minutes later, we heard the kitchen door unlock, open, and footsteps walk through into the living room. They were heavy footsteps, and not at all the sound my mother made when walking through the house. So I initially thought it was my dad who'd come home from his office. The footsteps trudged all the way up to our den and stopped. Elle and I looked at each other briefly in confusion, and we waited for him to poke his head in the den. But nothing. I called out to him.
Dad?
But nothing. Then we heard the footsteps suddenly run. From the living room, through the foyer, and up the stairs in a hurry. Almost like they were running from something. They sounded harried, panicked even. Me and Elle looked at each other and asked, "Did you hear that?" We both wanted to make sure the other was not hearing things in an empty house that wasn't there. We both assured each other that we most definitely heard those footsteps. But then the footsteps ran back downstairs, through the living room, into the kitchen, and then stopped at the door. We waited, hearts thumping out of our chests. After what felt like ages, the footsteps boomed off the kitchen linoleum, running the same path as before. As they reached the top of the stairs to the upstairs landing, we heard them run right into my dad's study. Dad kept all his old law books, records, comics, and other old books up there that were my grandfather's. It was on the slant of the roof, and was a really cool room that was open with no door, like a nook. It suddenly became deathly quiet. It was eerie and made my skin crawl. This lasted a minute or two before all hell broke loose in my dad's study. It sounded like the room was being trashed, with books flying off shelves, papers ripping, things being thrown around. We stood at the bottom of the stairs looking up, waiting to see something. Then, a black humanoid shadow darted across the landing into my parents' room, which was directly across the landing from my dad's study. We were terrified at this point, but extremely curious. So we decided to go and investigate. Grabbing bats, we went upstairs, slowly listening for a peep. But nothing. That eerie quiet we experienced before had descended on the house again, as if it was holding a collective breath, waiting. After what felt like an eternity, we reached the top of the stairs, looking quickly into my dad's study and expecting the worst. But we were met with a clean space, with nothing out of place at all. We searched everywhere, but we found no one. Nothing. About the time we finished our frantic search, my mother and sister came back home. We told her everything. She listened to us and didn't discount our experience, but didn't encourage any more from us, nor did she give any theories herself. This was just one of dozens of occurrences in the house over the years. I'll leave it there for now, but we'll send in more for you to read soon. Like I said, I have volumes. I look forward to more of the show and collaborating with you. As you know, I'm a huge fan and love listening. Chat soon. Best regards, Katie. I think you'll all agree that this has been yet another fantastic collection of listener stories, and we'd like to thank each and every one of you for sending them into the show. Don't forget that there's still more to come, so stay tuned and keep listening. And if you have a story, why not send it in? We would love to hear. And if you haven't got a story, well, take heed. Avoid Ouija boards, early dark November morning walks, isolated Cotswold pubs with distinct Hotel California vibes, because the next person who can check out any time they like but never leave could be you. Do you have an interesting story which you'd be willing to share with the show? If so, your story could feature in our end-of-season listener stories episodes. Please get in touch with the show via email at contactus@hauntedukpodcast.com, marking the subject as listener story. We're waiting for your stories. As well as coffee, you can also follow the Haunted UK podcast on Twitter at Haunted UK Pod and on Instagram at Haunted UK Podcast. You can also find us on our website at www.hauntedukpodcast.com, where you'll be able to keep up to date with news and announcements, browse and download our episode scripts, get in touch with us, and much, much more. This episode was presented by Steve, produced by Pink Flamingo Home Studio, which you can also find on Instagram by searching for at Pink Flamingo Home Studio. The script for this episode was edited by Marie Waller Proofreading. For more information about this service, contact Marie at mariewaller.proofreading@gmail.com. For a list of all research sources which we found helpful for the writing of this episode, please see the show's notes. Thank you again for listening to and supporting the Haunted UK podcast. So until the next episode, stay safe and take care.